Everybody recording?
Yep, she gone.
Right. Good morning, everyone. I am Kamala Rampasad De Silva, CEO of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to our session this morning entitled A Mindful Prescription, Preserving Mental Health and Wellness in a Time of Crisis. There is no doubt COVID-19 and the containment measures imposed by governments will take a toll on businesses and consequently the mental health of employees and employers alike. The emotional turmoil will not only be felt now, but more so when there's another need to readjust to the working environment when restrictions are lifted. As the board, in charting the direction of an organization, it is important to be aware of the impact these measures and the accompanying economic hardships being experienced by employees, and therefore know how to lead with empathy in your responses. In today's session, the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute has brought together a distinguished group of experts. They will provide insights and guidance to help us recognize the signs and to deploy strategies to minimize the impact of these changes on the emotional and mental health of employees and employers alike. Because let us face it is an emotional toll on directors and senior managers too to cope with financial losses themselves, or to make decisions which results in financial losses to others. So just before we go to the panel, I would like to make a few housekeeping announcements. We would like everyone to remain on mute during the initial panel discussion. You will be invited to make contributions or ask questions after the panelists have initially spoken. There is an icon at the bottom of your screen to raise your hand when you want to get the moderator's attention. You will need to unmute yourself, and then we would like you to press the mute icon again as soon as you are done to minimize any disruptive noises. You may also make comments in the chat feature, which may be read out during the session. As always, our technical support is provided by Christy Johnsler Crouch from SmartServe Limited. Christy's services are outsourced, and we are very pleased with the excellent service that she provides in supporting these sessions. So those of you who are new to the online environment and would like to get this kind of technical support, you can make sure to reach out to Christy. Please note too that this meeting is being recorded and that the recording will be sent to you afterwards by Christy. She will also ensure that the recording is available on our CCGI website, so it can be available to anyone who will benefit from our discussions. So having said all that, I'd like to move immediately to our distinguished panel of speakers. They comprise Ms. Anna Maria Mora, a counseling psychologist who is well known in Trinidad and Tobago and the region. Dr. Keith Likwai, organizational psychologist and an organizational development consultant, a Trinidadian who is currently resident in Jamaica. Ms. Lucy Gabriel, whose specialty in mental health therapy and whose counseling has really helped many cope with emotional trauma. I'm hoping Ms. Gabriel will join us shortly because I haven't seen her on our among our participants list as yet. And of course, we have coming from Guyana, Mr. Ren Gonzalez, who is the president of the Psychological Association of Guyana and who brings a wealth of HR expertise as well in his discussions and sharing with us. I know that we would learn a lot from today's session, and I'm anxious really to get the panel going. So I want to hand over to our moderator, the chairman of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, our expert moderator, Mr. Nigel Romano. Good morning, Nigel. I'm handing over to you.
Good morning, Kamala. Thank you very much. And I'd like to thank the panel, Anna Maria and Keith, I know for a very long time, Lucy and Ren. Well, I'll meet them today. And the topic is a critical one. It's a very, I think, a very timely one, given the disruption being caused by the pandemic. And the disruption is not only that some people are losing their jobs or facing a lot of uncertainty, but even those with jobs are having to cope with a new way of working. I've been telling people for a long time that work is not some place you go to. Work is something you do, and where and how you work should be agnostic as to where you work. And what we have experienced with the pandemic and the rise of Zoom and Teams and technology of that nature is the ability to work everywhere and anywhere without having to physically travel there. That's almost a two-edged sword, because it seems that there's some people are working much harder now than they were working before. And in fact, having to balance family and although work is not someplace you go to, where you work is important. And not having a space at home where you can work, I am lucky in that regard, is also a factor. So I'm looking forward to the contributions of the panelists. Some of the words I wrote down were supervision, productivity, work, workplace, and navigating all of that. So I am going to shut up and listen and take a lot of notes, and I will hand it over to Anna Maria, who will lead us off this morning. Thank you, Anna Maria.
Thank you. Thank you, Nigel. Hello, everyone. When we were doing the dry run yesterday, I commented that this topic is about being mindful, and that is what I'm going to focus on. And Nigel just talked about the where you work and how you work, but you can work, the ability to work anywhere. And that has a sense of mindfulness that you know, your workspace changes, but you have to begin to self-regulate now, because it's a place, a different space, yes, but the whole thing about being mindful about where you are now and self-regulate, and that is what mindfulness is. The mindful prescription is self-regulation of attention, of an attitude of curiosity and openness. Those are some of the things, and acceptance of change. We are creatures of habit. Many of us move on autopilot during the day. We are, I mean, almost moving like robots. We program ourselves to do things. We just program ourselves every morning. It's the same routine. The children have to fall in. If they are not falling in, there is all this confusion to get out of the house in the morning. Those kinds of things that will be different now. But mindfulness is the ability to self-regulate, to be open to change, and I mean, that is something that is going to be very difficult for us, being creatures of habit and moving on autopilot every day. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, and maybe give some examples of it, because I had a parent call me yesterday and very upset. She's working and her mom is taking care of her 9-year-old daughter. And of course the teacher is sending material for this 9-year-old daughter to work with. And after half an hour, this 9-year-old daughter is all over the place. She concentrates for half an hour. And the grandmother, who is a retired teacher, of course, gets very angry with her and there's confusion in the house. The child picks up her iPad and runs to her room and shuts the door, and there is all this. And if she were, I guess, mindful, she would observe the pattern that maybe after half an hour, this child needs a break. After half an hour, this child needs a break. And if she is, I mean, being a retired teacher, she has her habits that have been, I guess, over the years, and getting her to self-regulate now and not to be so stressed with this nine-year-old is going to be a challenge. But, you know, one of the things about mindfulness, the research shows that even after 20 minutes of being exposed to how we do this, how this openness and self-regulation happens, and how it makes it very easy, much easier to manage your space, it will begin to, you know, work. And it is said that you cannot really work or be trained, that you have to be in the moment and understand that, wait a minute, this is, you have to regulate yourself, that, listen, my heart rate is going up here, I'm getting angry with this child. Take some deep breaths and say, listen, look for the pattern. Half an hour every day is what she starts with. Give her a break. Let us see her come back, so that at least she could finish the work the teacher has. Sometimes they get a day or two to do it. Sometimes they have to do it by the afternoon. So mindfulness is something that we really need to, in times of crisis, that we have to begin to look at. And I'm not sure if the other panelists think that this is something that could be done, or if it is, a kind of airy fairy thing in our mind. I mean, Psychology Today thinks that it can be done. They talk about, you know, driving up the road and feeling the steering wheel, understanding that steering wheel and what is it doing. Because yesterday I gave an example of the fact that you coming up Beetham and you suddenly reach the Valsane, the lights, and you wake up, because you really can't remember where you're passing, and you say, oh, should I reach here already? Those kinds of things happen to us, and we do not know how many accidents are happening. We always say that you lose control of the car. We do not know how many accidents happen because of mindlessness. And those are some of the things that I think even corporate directors and board members and what have you, because they are the ones a lot working on autopilot. Those of you who are members of this online webinar, you all are in positions that are really very, very high intensity positions, and maybe we could see if that kind of approach is possible. I think I'm going to stop there for a little while.
Thank you very much. I'd take it over to Keith and to get the organizational perspective. Keith?
Thanks, Nigel and Anna. Morning, everyone. So I want to link with your mindfulness, Anna, in terms of, and then move on to a more macro perspective. So the mindfulness really, you know, speaks to an opportunity for us to be introspective, to look inward, to, in these times of a global reset, which is what I consider it to be, in so many different ways, psychologically, economically, and so on, what we have is an opportunity for us to pause and to be mindful and introspective in terms of where we are as individuals claiming personal agency in terms of what is going on around us. There's a saying in psychology that context is everything. You can't understand behavior without context. Right. And so our context is different over the last, 4 or 5 months, depending. So I think it's critical. I think it's quite an opportunity, and I guess we could get to it later on in terms of what this mindfulness and introspection can do for us as leaders in terms of leading organizations, management, etc. But I also want to kind of segue from a macro perspective in terms of, you know, we are in one of our, as I said yesterday in our little brief discussion pilot, we are in one of the largest global psychosocial and economic experiments that the world has ever seen. And it's ongoing, and it has consequences, as we all know. And why do I say that? Because it changes practically everything that we know in terms of how the world has operated. And so we are, the global economy is being reset. We are in a deflationary period. There is no consistency anymore in terms of anything, right? You don't know what tomorrow will bring. So having just said that, in terms of a macro framework, you know, I guess we could drill down in terms of how it impacts on us in the Caribbean and, of course, in Trinidad and Tobago. So we are in a large psychosocial and economic experiment, and we need to figure out in Trinidad and Tobago, to bring it home and in the Caribbean, how this is going to impact on us and what are the opportunities in terms of our own personal leadership and also our national leadership and regional leadership in the Caribbean, because there are opportunities in this. We know that the economies, global economies are being deflated. I was watching BBC this morning. They mentioned that they expect that the European Union economy is going to deflate by, GDP is going to drop by about nearly 8%, 7.75%. And, you know, they've said the same about China and the United States, et cetera, et cetera. Productivity is down, as Nigel mentioned, in so many different ways. Economies are at a standstill. So the other part to this is that with the deflation, with this large pause in so many ways, it is a traumatic experience. And we are living the trauma now because of the, I'm going to use the word lockdown, but I'll try not to use it again after that. And so it also provides us with an opportunity in terms of this reset to kind of consider the opportunities that may arise for us, even in the midst of the trauma. I was on a, well, Anna and I were on a panel last week, and we had a colleague there who is a clinician and a trauma specialist. And she reminded us that after the traumatic event, which is what we are going through right now, let us assume that at some point in time with these pushback in dates, we are released and we are back out into the open, still physically distancing. I dislike the term social distancing. It is not something that is something that we should be acting out and experiencing in a time of isolation. We need to be socially connected more so than ever. And so we need to be physically distancing, which is what the WHO had recommended initially. They said social distancing, and then they corrected themselves because they considered the implications of it, and they moved from social to physically distancing. So even in the midst of that new order and the trauma, when we are back out into the open, the trauma will continue. This is when the trauma really hits, according to my clinical colleague, mm-hmm. because we have to go back to a new norm, whatever it may look like, and try to pick up our lives having suffered, gone through, experienced all the different things that we are currently experiencing in terms of the isolation, in terms of the loss of income, in terms of the stress, the anxiety, the depression, all the emotional reactions that we are having to this scenario, this pandemic. And that is something I think we need to consider seriously in the Caribbean. We have the benefit of, you know, our island space and small space and flora and fauna and this kind of tropical nirvana that people think of. But in the midst of that all, we really need to consider the trauma that will descend on us as individuals and as a community when we go back to this so-called new normal, because that is when it will hit.
It was,
when people have to come back and try to relate to one another, how they will relate, how far they're going to keep apart, is this re-socialization going to affect them in terms of their interpersonal relationships, their group skills, their leadership skills? Do we want to be connected anymore to human beings, given that for the past 5 months we have been told to not connect? All right, so, you know, I just want to put that on the table for us to have that discussion as we go through the hour and a half.
May I say something?
Of course, go ahead.
Mr. Moderator, one of the things about trauma is that it changes our reality forever. Yesterday we talked about grieving, that people might be in grief having lost a lot of their reality. So that going back after everything ends, our reality will change. So that we need to have people understand, because the whole thing about grief and mourning, the whole thing about people who have to live after a hurricane has smashed up their whole island and sense of who they are, changes their reality forever. So, and that is what is the what trauma is, and people need to learn that. And it is, I mean, that whole reality change, the stages of grief and mourning that go through, the denial, the, you know, the rage, the depression, those are things that happen before there's some acceptance, and that takes time. That takes time. Research has it that for us to begin to accept this new normal, that I don't know if that's a new phrase that is going to be used. It takes about 2 years for people to get back to some kind of real existence after trauma. So 2 years, and guys. So we have to try and work with our employees and, you know, find ways to kind of help, because there would be some, I think it was Kamla yesterday talked about grief. I think it was Kamla when we were going through. So I just wanted to add that.
Thank you very much. Ren. Let's get the perspective from Guyana.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
And nice meeting you all. I think the panelists especially, because we, I think, work in the same field. So it is always nice to meet brothers and sisters in the same discipline, working in the same discipline, both in the organizational aspect of it and the psychological aspect. When Kamla was inviting me, I was a little hesitant about it because I have to see patients. And so I had to reschedule my patients today. I am gonna be seeing them this afternoon. And I was listening carefully to what you are all saying. I just muted myself and I stopped my video in order for me to have a better bandwidth, and I can understand exactly what you are saying. And essentially, the topic is very good. It is about mindfulness. And before I came to Guyana, I'm from the Philippines, by the way. I am not a Guyanese, but soon I think I will be a Guyanese. and I was practicing Zen, and Zen is all about mindfulness. So participants, I'll ask you if you are even aware that you are breathing right now. Okay. Now, in Zen practice, we always tell ourselves that, you know, breathing in, I am aware that I am breathing in. Breathing out, I am aware that I am breathing out. Okay. And when you say that to yourself, there is now a unity between mind and body. Okay. And which is very important right now, because somehow we have been extricated from what was normal then, and now we are facing certain new challenges. I was interviewed by some media at the onset of COVID because of the fear of social isolation, or as you have been saying, physical isolation. So in a crisis, the coping skills and the personal disposition of an individual will have to come into play. So that being said, any radical changes in the environment will impact on us psychologically, mentally, and physically. So by nature, we are social beings, and thus it would be very difficult for us to be isolated and then to be extricated from the daily routines we have been accustomed to would really need a lot of adjustment. That means that we can be lonely, frustrated, angry, helpless, anxious, bored, worried because of the feelings of uncertainty and isolation. And now we are supposed to face a new environment, and which is actually an old environment, our homes. But we usually stay more or live our lives more at work. And so it can be a little, different. And mind you, in my practice, recently I have even been increasing numbers of couples who are into conflicts now because of the reason that they are perhaps not so used to seeing each other every day, right? So when certain resources are scarce, then certain conflicts can arise. And scarcity can come from both financial aspect and all other kinds of scarcity. And then, now you have to look at yourself. Am I an introvert? Am I an extrovert? Okay, people who are extrovert generally would have bigger adjustment to make. And these are the people who would like to socialize. These are the people who would like to go out and have parties every Friday. These are the people who can't seem to be alone because they find aloneness as equal to being lonely. On the other side of the continuum are the introverts. And these are the people who usually would be happy just relating to one or two friends who would be in the house more often than not. And these people would have better adjustment skills in terms of the physical and perhaps social isolation that we are talking about. So loss is almost always a precursor for negative emotions like grief and depression. And we need to look out for this. People who lost their jobs or financial security may worry about their careers. What now? What is going to happen? How am I going to put food on the table? I have lost my jobs. So, or jobs, if there are many, or job if you have one, okay? Now, however, with the COVID-19, things have become a little less bright, and our sense of control, and this is very important for people. When we lose control over certain things that we used to have control over, then we find some uncertainty, we will be very anxious. Now, however, there are things that we can control. And even no matter what happens, there are things that we can control. One, our emotions. Second, our thoughts. And third, our behavior. And these are three things that that will equip us adjust to the reality or to the new normal that we have right now. I have been doing some drug addiction counseling. And one of the things that we psychologists would actually tell our patients would be, try to learn to be comfortable with your discomfort. Okay, so what is the discomfort for them? The discomfort now is that they are not supposed to use drugs, and that is very uncomfortable. So they have to redefine fun. How are you going to redefine fun now that you are isolated? How are you going to redefine certain aspects of your being right now, now that we don't have the normal life that we used to have? So this is very, these are very important. So we, a lot of us right now are still in the denial stage. Like, we are asking, why me? Why this thing happened? Why do I have to lose my family members? Or why do I have to lose my job? So we are still at that denial stage. We haven't accepted it as yet. And perhaps we are in the process of acceptance. Once we are able to accept, then the better adjustment will have to follow. Now, this is the key to survival, is adaptability. And the reason why we are all here now is because we are able to adapt. And if we look into the theory of evolution, why we are here, because it's not because of intelligence, but it is because of our ability to adapt. And we have that in our genes now, because if we follow the theory of evolution, then we actually have that capacity to adapt already. So behavior can either be adaptive or maladaptive. So adaptive in a sense that I know my reality. So I don't have a job now, or I have a variable income right now. That is now my reality. And this has to be explained to the home, to the family. At Eureka, where I am working as a regular HR and the COO right now, we have adopted a variable income. That, what does that mean? That means to say that our income would vary according to the revenue, because the company cannot afford anymore to pay the usual. So that is an, rather than we actually retrench people, I as an HR propose, okay, we will have to have a variable income rather than retrench people. So we never retrench anyone. So going back, when mobility, I know I have 10 minutes. Kamla, you just tell me if I am going over the time. When mobility is limited and access to many social services become less available, coping skills of an individual will not be aided by the outside world as it used to, but rather by his internal world and immediate environment. And when I say immediate environment, it is now the family. Now, what about those people who are actually finding escape from home to work? Like, okay, my house, my home is not a safe environment. So what are we gonna do? Well, the reality is that it is. That is the reality. But you can have some safety nets, like perhaps staying with a friend if that is available, or perhaps calling a friend or a family member just in case danger is there. But at the same time, there are government agencies to actually look, that you can call to help you. So that being said, and in conclusion, our sense of adaptability is not measured until we are in dire situations. People who are able to adapt to whatever circumstances will evolve as better persons in the end. Any calamity or malady, such as what we are witnessing right now, will also bring about opportunity. And from an HR perspective, I have been encouraging our staff to adapt. So there should be readaptation of skills, reskilling. And when you need to risk, why? Because now you have to adjust the, what are the things that are in demand right now? So just like in our staff, we train some of our medical technologists to do COVID testing. So that at least they earn more than what is being proposed. Now, when they just do their ordinary job, they will have to earn less. But when they have a new skill, then they are able to do that and earn more. So better adaptation skills, better management of emotions, and a realization that our significant others, our family and friends, are the best support that we have right now. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ren. And I lived in the Philippines for 5 years. So welcome to the Caribbean. So I wanna focus on and focus on adaptability and go back to what Anna Maria said about this 2 year transition.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that the speed of the transitions and the number of transitions that we have to cope with are not slowing down. They're becoming even more, it's happening much faster. So how can you help us as a leadership to help teams to adapt faster and to deal with the trauma faster? So anyone can answer, you can answer sequentially. Whoever wants to go ahead.
Okay, let me go first since I am here already.
All right.
So in any traumatic experience, there is what you call as post-traumatic syndrome. Mm-hmm. That can happen. All right. Now, in normal practice, especially for children, we ask children to tell the story every now and then. Okay. That is to get the experience out of the system. So telling the story, ventilate it. And that is what psychotherapy is all about. Ventilate, all right? So it is important that children or even adults will have to tell their stories. And, you know, I happen to be a person who was in charge of the crisis intervention when a big earthquake actually happened in the Philippines. That was in 1990. Now I'm revealing how old I am right now. 1990. I was a young psychologist then, and we have to gather people and let them tell us what their experiences were so that, you know, they can actually get out of the trauma. Second is that we need to look at the world in a way like a baby would, you know, baby steps. So we need to look at the moment. We just have to look at the moment. Sometimes we look so far away, like 2 years from now, 3 years from now, what's going to happen? No, but we are missing the moment. In Zen, we are actually taught to actually just think for the moment. And plan for the future, but not, you know, always predicting the future negatively, yeah. And so on. So while we are still alive, we are still breathing, we have hope, and this is the moment we have to enjoy. By the way, did you enjoy your shower this morning? Or were you thinking about something in the past or something in the future while you are showering? Then if you did that, then you were not enjoying already your shower. Or did you enjoy your breakfast? How did your egg or whatever, your chocolate taste? Some people just drink these things like as you know, mechanically as they can. They don't already savor the taste. So the way to living is now, okay, this is my moment now. I am still alive. I am living. And I'm not going to think so much of like what the future holds. But it doesn't necessarily mean that I need a plan about it too. That's my take.
Thank you very much, Anna Maria.
Well, while he was speaking, one of the things about me, and I think Keith knows this, is that I like definitions. Definitions uh-huh. give me a sense of order and structure. And when Ren was talking about being in control, that is one of the definitions of mental health, being in control of your life, being in control of your social life, just being in control. And it is important that our employees, you know, have a sense of what it means, having control of your social life, your friendships, realizing your abilities and being able to cope with normal stresses of life. That is what mental health is. So Ren was talking about mental health when he was communicating with us. So I think we have to help people to understand, because if they don't know and they feel, you know, it's just like the grandparent who is there with her 9-year-old and fussing, all she's thinking about is this 9-year-old and the C exam in 3 years' time. And that's the future. You know, we have to have her in the moment, get to understand that her granddaughter has an attention span of half an hour, so let's go and give her a break every year. And as she grows older, we would be able to, you know, have her accept herself for who she is and accept this situation and understand that right now, you know, this is what needs to be done right now. And I'm going to be getting some time to relax as she grows older, maybe the attention span will grow, you know, to an hour or 45 minutes. But those are things that we have to be in control of. And I know the discussion, your topic is about mental health and awareness. So these are things that we really have to help our employees with now. Yes, it is about how you could make your workplace and your work, how you can become more productive. And for us, the bottom line is the, you know, making sure that you make the money. But now there's no bottom line anymore right now. So that we have to help people to manage themselves in this new situation that we find. And those are some of the things I think the directors and managers have to focus on. And even those who have been laid off, they worked with your company for maybe 10, 15, oh gosh, they really gave a lot of their life to you. And you need to try and help to take care of them now. Even if it's not financially, it would be psychologically. And I'm sure they will be appreciative of that, help them to manage their workspace at home. Some of them might have 5 children, all different ages, and what's happening with them there. You know, these are some of the things I think people would need help with.
Thank you. Keith?
Yeah. How do we help employees in terms of our planning for the future? I really want to connect with what my colleagues are talking about. It may sound very esoteric and so on, and I understand the framework in which organizations are looking at the future in terms of survival. I appreciate that. And so I want to break it down in terms of the individual survival, the group, and then larger, whether it's the country or otherwise. And so as we have been saying, we've had a traumatic event, it's ongoing. There is only the now. Tomorrow really is just a fantasy. It is part of our planning process, yes, but it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And I know organizations, in order to survive, and individuals need to always be looking at tomorrow and what they need to do, and, you know, the next day and the next month and you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that, even though needed, can also trigger quite a bit of anxiety. Because as Ren was saying, when we try to control things in order to kind of be on top of the outside world. But we need to, we are at a point in time now where we understand and should appreciate that there are some things we do not have control over. And we need to reframe our thinking in terms of that. Right? I mean, if anything, this pandemic has shown that there are things that we don't have control over, yeah, that we're very interconnected as a species, globally, countries, etc. And so time to pull back and say, okay, so there's only the now. I need individually, personally, to get a hold of myself and reframe what I have control over. as Ren was talking about, he mentioned in terms of emotions, thoughts, and behavior. And I want to add to that. One of the ways we have control over self is by the information that we take in concerning our current situation. Because some of the things that are out there that is triggering a lot of anxiety is the information flow. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of information, misinformation, disinformation, propaganda, blah, blah, blah. It's out there. And we connected, so it's on our phone, it's on a tool that we have in our hand. And one of the ways in terms we can regulate self and have some personal control and be mindful at the same time, as Anna said, is by managing the information flow that we take in, which then helps to impact our perception or interpretation or sense-making of the world around us, and then we act on it. So there's information, there's perception, and then there's the behavior that flows from the first two. And so I'm offering that as an approach, a methodology, in terms of how we can probably deal with our lack of control, our anxiety, and all the things that we're going through personally. Now, at the individual level, that applies, but it also applies at the organizational level. What information is the organization using in order to manage its perception of its industry, its sector, its world around it, and how it can then act in order to survive as an organization in terms of revenue and income and so on. As Ren said, so you retool, right? You have certain equipment and whatever, and you can retool now to fit a different market or a market that you see coming down the pipeline. I mean, I'm connected to someone who is looking at and actually exposing Trinidad companies to stationary heat thermometers. We can easily envision that any organization, company, building that I go into, I am going to have to be screened. Right now, people are pointing these thermometers at our head. They're taking our temperature. We know we have to wear masks, et cetera, et cetera. We have to distance ourselves, depending on the context, 1-2 meters, et cetera. But one could easily envision, I cannot get into any building, just as we post 9/11 now have to be screened in terms of these scanners and so on, that I cannot get into a building, private or corporate, without some kind of thermometer taking my temperature, because people are paranoid. People are concerned, right? And so you have opportunities. I'm giving that as an example of new opportunities that are going to arise where organizations have to take whatever information is out there in terms of this new dispensation and adjust, adapt, as my colleague said, to this new reality. And so both at the personal individual level, both at the leadership level, both at the organizational level, adaptation is required. But I think it's also an opportunity, even in the midst of the planning, and I mentioned it yesterday, one of the things that leaders can do, and this pandemic has brought a challenge to leadership, yes, to authority and what that looks like, and to the boundaries. Clearly, globally, we have noticed that this fantasy that we have, that we are, you know, we have so many different boundaries that protect us from others and other countries and so on. You know, it's really a fantasy. How are we going to manage our new boundaries, both physically in terms of our 2-meter spacing, both nationally in terms of travel and so on? And yes, the projections are out there that travel is not going to, the airline industry is not going to get back to where it was for at least 2 years, 2.5 years, right? So what does that mean for you in terms of your business activities? Everything is moving online, right? So I'm trying to show the connections in terms of both individually as organizations, groups, and nationally, how we have to really adapt and reflect and be introspective in terms of what we have control over, how we could tap into all the critical thinking and resources that we have in-house in terms of our organizations. And so come up with creative ideas in terms of repurposing ourselves in order to survive, because that is the mood that we are in, right? One of the things that I hope that happens in the Caribbean, and especially in my country, Trinidad and Tobago, even though I'm not there, is that I think it's an opportunity for us to grow up. Grow up in the sense of emotionally, psychologically, and economically, right? Oil and gas, we know all the different things that we depend on in terms of our economy, right? Our large import bills, right? Guyana has come into a lot of little mineral resources now, and you know, all the foreign companies are there to drill it and take it out. We need to stop and reflect in terms of how we see ourselves in the Caribbean, what are the talents, indigenous resources, etc., creativity that we have, and how we could leverage and maximize that in terms of engaging with the rest of the world. Everyone is watching the TV and the media and the information and seeing how leadership, I'm going to be generous, is being challenged in the Western world. I'm going to be very generous, right? And so futuristically, we need to kind of delink, disconnect, step back, and consider globally, strategically, who we are connecting to, what are we taking from the outside world, what benefits us, what is of use to us in the region, in the Caribbean, given our space and our historical legacy, and how we could maximize and leverage that. As I said earlier in my opening remarks, we have a reset going on. And the global reset is moving eastward. It is to Asia, to China, etc. We live in a multipolar world. Mm-hmm. And so we need to consider strategically the implications of that as some countries rise and others decline in power geostrategically, and what are the implications for us in the Caribbean? Because it will filter down. So we better get ahead of the curve and grow up. I'll stop there.
Yeah. Challenge, growing up.
Yes.
Growing up is always a challenge. Yeah, go ahead, Kamla.
Yeah, I really like this point that Dr. Lee Kwai has raised with us in terms of understanding who we are and using this as an opportunity, because we're in crisis, to really redefine the way we move forward. And there was something that was raised yesterday in our planning meeting, and that was an agreement that in our region, or more so possibly in Trinidad and Tobago, but I think it's a region, that generally we wear masks, you know, in terms of our emotions and how we deal with things. So I'm wondering, given that we have so many persons who will be experiencing trauma and stress in different ways, how do we even identify when persons are impacted? How do we get past these masks?
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, I work with teenagers, and this young lady wrote this poem because I write too, and I encourage young people to write because they cannot communicate with adults. I mean, they find us too judgmental, et cetera, et cetera. So she started her poem with, "People are not what they pretend to be. They hide their true feelings for no one else to see. They pretend to feel what they don't so that no one will really know the real them. People want to be loved but are afraid of being rejected." Now that is the opening. I have about, it's four stanza verses. But I think when I do my workshops, I have them dissect, look at this poem and really put themselves in it, because she was 14. This was done in the, I'm going to date myself, but this was done quite a long time ago, before the 90s. And, you know, she was so very sure when we spoke about it that that people are not real. And how do we get people to be real and to look at themselves, I guess, in the moment? And Ren talks about his Zen. We do some exercises. We have this whole thing about the fact that the brain, one side is logic, one side is emotion. And, you know, when you are angry and you are in trauma, your emotional side just goes, wreaks havoc. And we have some exercises that would help you to balance the emotion and the logic. You know, so there are a lot of practical things that people can do. And some of these things are found online now. And if people would go online and we encourage them to, this is what they need to be doing to help themselves to control their or take charge of their mental health, instead of minding people business, et cetera, et cetera. But, and encourage them to work at taking charge and control of themselves, not just their environment, but of themselves. And I think this is what the leaders or the leadership needs to do. I know Keith said that leadership is now being challenged all over the world. We could see that. And even, I guess, for people who have been retrenched and made to feel that they were not important in the organization after they worked for so long, they are angry. And I think the leadership really has to I guess, reach out to them and help them to take control of where they find themselves now. I don't know if that is esoteric, as the word that did you use that word, Keith? Somebody yes, used yes, that yes, word. Yes. I don't know if that kind of thing is just something that, you know, is in our head and not realistic. Reaching out, even sending emails out to them and getting them to understand that you would want to help them take control of what is happening with them now. I don't know if people find that is realistic.
Reno,
can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, Ren.
Yeah, so I think what, to me, what Kamala was trying to ask is like, how do we know if like our staff or some members of our family are undergoing stress, not only stress, anxiety or depression. So basically, Kamala and perhaps to the rest of the participants, the statistical and diagnostic manual for mental disorders would have a lot of lists of symptoms, right? And however, these reactions that we are having to our present situation are normal. So what makes, like, depression is all right as long as it is not too much. So it is like, how much do you have of this particular disorder? How much depression do you have? How much anxiety do you have? Does it already interfere with your day-to-day living? Now, that is one precursor there. That's very important. If it already is interfering with work, with family relationships, etc., then that is already one way of like looking at, oh, something is happening with this individual. Now, for instance, for generalized anxiety, DSM would have listed several: restlessness, fatigue, decreased concentration, insomnia, and a lot of people can't sleep. Okay, because there is a lot of worry, okay? And then, again, in almost all these disorders, the last thing that they always mention is interference with work and social functioning. So, all of those. Depression, on one hand, is another thing. Moods. If the mood is there, like within 2 months already, and it is not changing, every day that you actually get up, you are down, and there are already thoughts of suicide, then there is already an alarm there that is supposed to be looked at. If people are trying to give away certain things that they really cherish and they try to give it away to some people, then that is also a sign, a symptom. People joking about killing themselves. You don't have to take that. You have to take that seriously. Even they are joking about it. Most of people who have attempted to commit suicide, excuse me, or have successfully attempted suicide, actually have joked about it, have mentioned their plan to actually kill themselves. Now, that is one thing. So I was mentioning the other day that it is important for you to gather your family members and try to look at and explain to your children what is happening, what are the realities that they have right now. It is not the same like what they used to have before COVID. And they have to understand that within their realm of free existence, in terms of their play, in terms of how they look at schooling and all the stuff. Now for workers, we need to have some stress management programs. And I want to initiate that in my company, where perhaps through Zoom, I can gather those people who have problems with what is happening right now, overthinking. Let's just start with overthinking. Let's just start with anxiety about work. Will I get a salary at the end of the month? And so on. So those are small things first, and perhaps that's very important. The need for positive thoughts is also important, because when we have this, we are able to have an imagery of what is positive or a hopeful attitude towards life, even if in dire situations, then that can help. So I think that's what I'm going to say.
Thank you. The question I have, and I want to bring it back to the workplace to focus, but I want to switch it to managing remotely. How, because in my experience, making sure that the team is aligned, that everybody knows this is where we are going and this is how we are going to get there, and this is your role, etc. It's difficult even when you're in the same room or in the same location. Now we have remote work on steroids, and how would you advise leaders, managers, what would be the key things that they need to look for to ensure that not only that people know where they're going, but that they're communicating and keeping in touch to make sure that they stay on the right path. What would you advise?
All right. Okay. I think Keith would like to say something. So.
Yeah, go ahead, Keith, and then we'll take it around. And then Anna.
Well, obviously leadership has been challenged to operate in a different way. And so we need to reflect in terms of what that looks like. What does leadership look like post-pandemic, or currently, as you mentioned, in terms of this new virtual world that is, that we all being a part of on a daily basis, more or less. And that has its own dynamic. There's a term in social psychology called impression management. And that is why, and I want to link this conversation and the question you brought up, Nigel, with Kamla's previous conversation about masks. So we know why we wear masks, because the mask is about playing something that you're not, pretending to be something that you're not. Mm-hmm. We know about it in terms of Trinidad Carnival and that whole scenario. We're playing a mask, right? And with a mask. And so that is about impression management. And I think what we're being called to do is to be, at this time, is to be authentic. And that is a challenge for leadership. What does authentic leadership look like in a post-pandemic period? And we've made a lot of references to it in terms of looking after staff and so on and so on. The virtual world. Clearly, it has its own psychology. Just in terms of, you know, people are in squares, they're in boundaries, they're in their home space, they're wherever. And when you look at the screen now, in terms of Zoom or whatever AV you're using, you're not looking at the camera per se, you're looking at the individual in the box. So it changes your whole focus, right? And while you're looking at the person is looking at you. So that has its own dynamic. But to get to the part about managing employees and so on in this new space virtually, clearly there are some practical things to do in terms of making sure that people have the technology, that they occur with it, that we get familiar. We're all in a learning curve, a very steep learning curve, I'm sure some more so than others,
right?
In terms of the technology and how we get a handle of it, right? But the technology is a tool. Mm-hmm. It is merely a tool at the end of the day to be used for a further purpose. And as per this conversation, the purpose is resetting our economy, resetting our purpose in terms of income flow and revenue and so on and so on. How we can adapt to this post-pandemic space. And I think that one of the challenges for leadership going forward really is a development apart from just being authentic. Okay, so what I mean by being authentic is possibly leadership being challenged to show more of their warts as a way of being authentic. Because yep. you can't have a conversation about leadership without followership. So now the followership is virtual. The followership is less connected, right? What are the implications of this for you leading an organization, right? Where you can't see people's body language. Interestingly, I was on a Zoom call last month and somebody mentioned to me about my body language on the Zoom call. And what was curious about that, and she probably was correct because I was kind of multitasking and what have you. But what was interesting about that is that the person calling me out in terms of my body language on a group Zoom call was not showing her camera. She was not. You understand?
And she's cheating.
Yeah. Right? And so it's an opportunity for us really to be, again, come back to Anna's word about being mindful and sensitive and being aware of how we are leading in this post-pandemic period. And that means because employees coming back, those that come back and don't decide to disconnect, which you're going to have from the rat race and pursue a passion, etc. Mm-hmm. Right? You are going to have to be a lot more authentic with mm-hmm. them than before. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of degree, as Ren was talking in terms of depression and so on and so on. Right? And so it requires a certain level of consciousness in order to have this new leadership kind of approach, especially in a world of more physical distancing, where I can't look you in the eye, I can't see your body emotions, I can't see, et cetera, right? And so it's really a challenge. And as we said yesterday, I think one of the things that we really need to focus on is leadership acknowledging their humanity, vulnerabilities as leaders, mm-hmm. right? So if you're coming to talk to me, as a leader, post-pandemic, talk to me in terms of my loss of income, my family situation, all the stress and trauma that I'm going through currently and will continue to go through for the next few months, if possibly 2 to 3 years. Connect with me at that level.
Absolutely, yeah.
Connect with me at that level so I know you're genuine and authentic. Yeah. And you're not operating the way you were in December 2019.
Yeah.
I'll kind of stop there for now.
Ren, you wanted to say something, and then we'll go to. I'll ask Ben Lewis then. Go ahead.
Yeah. there was a good point there about authenticity. So how do you have to show authenticity? So I would add to that by being transparent. Yeah, transparency is very important in an organization. So right now what we are doing is really, we are transparent in terms of our financial stability. So people should know where we are. We have opened our books to our employees, and this is the reality. Wow. And you can actually see that in terms of the day-to-day, operation of the company. And when we proposed the variability in income, I said, how is that? They were questioning, like, how is that? How is that going to be? How sure are we that this is that we had a 50% downfall in terms of our revenue, or 40% or whatever percentage it is. Now, so it is important for us to be transparent and authentic. You can be transparent and perhaps not authentic. So when you say authentic, then you have to really show your books to them. Another one is what is our accountability? Okay, for the staff. So I raised that point when we were trying to open our laboratory to be a testing center. I said, what is, to our CEO, what is your accountability? If one of us gets sick, if one of us get actually, or one of us dies because of COVID, what is the accountability of the company? These are things that should be into the organization. And at the same time, another thing is, regarding the future, do I have a job after all this, post-pandemic, right? So do I still have a job? Will I maintain my job? So this, the HR manager will have to deal with that. It is important that is gonna be explained to the people that, okay, that they will have their job back as long as, you know, everything goes back to normal. Or, so accountability, transparency, and at the same time, what is also our social responsibility? And when we look at social responsibility from the HR perspective, it's like the wellness and well-being of our staff. Are they in good home conditions? Like, okay, we are talking about physical distancing, but have we looked into their home conditions as well? What are our responsibility towards that in terms of promoting well-being? And then I think lastly, we have to provide them with the resources that they need to perform their job during COVID and perhaps post-COVID. What do I mean? It is the empowering tools. If we need to have Zoom, then the company should be able to afford to actually get a premium. All right, we cannot stay with a free Zoom thing and 40 minutes, we're done. Mm-hmm. So I happen to teach at Nations University, and Nations University did it for every class. So we have we can accommodate so much and so on. So that's very important. We have to provide the technology for it. So in summary, accountability, very important. Our accountability to our staff, transparency, and at the same time, we provide them with, the technology that we need right now in order for them to perform their jobs. That's my take on it. And of course, from the psychological point of view, stress management is very important.
Ren, I wanted to ask, is the accountability policy where you will open your books to your employees, is that a national policy or just your company's policy?
No, it is only our company's. I don't know what is the national policy, but that is in response to the clamor of our staff regarding, their health, because we are a medical facility.
Okay.
Of course, we are frontliners, and so they are very much concerned about their health and their own families as well.
Okay.
So we need to know what is the accountability, or what can the company do just in case somebody gets COVID or so.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel better, Anna, having seen the books, they feel part of the company, that they are part of you, of the management and everything that they
are. Well, yes, at the very beginning, they were very stressful, but now they are, I think they have come to terms to with it already.
Variable income that they're going to be getting.
Yes, variable income. And so far, so good though. I think within the last 2 months, we haven't had any reduction in salaries as yet. So we are maintaining all the salaries 100%.
I just want to switch a little bit. Lewis Kinley, who is a good friend, has been managing a remote organization for a long time. Lewis, what can you share with us? How do you make this work?
Yeah, morning, everybody.
Excuse me. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, just really appreciative of everyone here, Sharon. Just a lot of knowledge on this. I really appreciate the points, Keith, you made about authenticity and, you know, really how the whole perspective of your coworkers changes when you're just seeing them in a box. So, you know, for the last several years, I've been working on distributed teams where we're even across time zones. And a few things that have really helped us, you know, really maintain that transparency and that authenticity is, I guess, three things. One is really sticking to our one-on-ones. You know, I think a lot of us have those one-on-one meetings with direct reports as we go through our normal work week or month. But it can be easy to let those slide when you're all together all the time. You know, you get lunch and it's okay. You do it next week. And this time it's more important than ever to really stick to those and say, you know what, let me spend more than 30 minutes with this person. It's, we're not seeing each other all the time. So really taking that time to ask how they're doing and understand, you know, what they're struggling with. I think most folks are not accustomed to being locked inside so much. The second thing is actually expanding those one-on-ones to say, you know what, everyone on the team, where possible, should be having those meetings with each other. Just that little bit of that structured interaction that, you know, again, when you're coming together in an office, it's really easy. You sit down, you have lunch, and you have a chat about whatever it is. But when we're all remote, we have to really be conscious of having that connection with each other. And that goes a long ways towards, you know, keeping everybody communicating and involved and aware of their purpose and how they fit in. And the third is, it is that, again, authenticity. You know, when I'm speaking with the people on my team, you know, it's letting them know, hey, I'm a little bit scared too. You know, I understand that it's a whole different world out there than we saw 2 months ago. And we really don't know where this whole thing is going to go or how it's all going to look in 6 months or a year. But, you know, if we keep working through this together, then at least we can have an impact on making sure that is, you know, as good as it can be. I think just those three things are really, really important. You know, stick to your one-on-ones with your team. Keep them talking, structure that communication across the team, and really take the time to share and ask how people are feeling.
Thank you very much. So when you have these conversations, what are you talking about?
I can
do anything. Do you have, no, but I'm looking now at, okay, does each team member have something specific that they're working on, or maybe three or four things that they're working on? Are you talking to them about progress, about health, that kind of stuff, in addition to their state of mind?
Yeah. So usually I try to keep it pretty open. Of course, I'll ask what they're struggling with or what their challenges have been, just to see where I can maybe, you know, share, hey, you know, I struggled with that too. Uh-huh. Really giving them the comfort that, you know, you don't have the chance to reach out and get that answer right away, but you did the right thing and you're still doing a great job. But I think more than that, you know, we really try and talk about what's happening outside of work. You know, we have those team meetings already that we talk about work enough. So it's just chatting about, you know, what games were you playing? How's your family doing? What were you watching? You know, what was that movie? What did that, you know, it's all that stuff that you don't get in the regular meetings.
Uh-huh. So you have regular meetings besides all of that?
Yeah, of course, we still have weekly team meetings, but those, you know, those one-on-ones are just an opportunity to really connect and share anything that's not really appropriate for the team setting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nigel,
can Keith, go ahead.
Yeah. I think what this is opening up for us is that there is going to be a need for more emotional and social intelligence skills by leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's all fine in terms of the conversation with your virtual team and so on. Part of the danger for that, for leadership, and I want to, as a way of checking out, just leave with some terms. There's a challenge for a new type of leadership. Let's call it eco-leadership. That's a buzzword going around, right? Because we've been following a business model that has hit a wall, that has reached a shelf life, that is ending. And we need to figure out what is this new business model that we're going to be using going forward. And that is what eco-leadership supposedly is about, right? The danger, however, is that leadership, however, cannot be all things to its employees. And this is where the professionals come in, like Anna Maria and Ren and so on. So you need to know your limitations. It's all well and good for you to be authentic, and you're trying to build trust. This is the thing that we're really working on going forward. Mm-hmm. How do I build trust with my employees in my organization? How do I raise the trust factor, right? But leadership also should not overreach or stretch themselves too much and try to be all things to their employees, because that can also come back to bite you in terms of the authenticity. And so it's a dance, it's a balance. So be aware of your strengths, be aware of your challenges, and try not to be too many things to all your employees. You cannot be. Know your limitations. So eco-leadership, right? Emotional and social intelligence skills, building trust within your organization. I want to just touch very quickly on a question that somebody asked in terms of how do you know people stressed out, depressed, etc. Leadership is challenged now, especially people who live in their head, who intelligent, educated, have degrees, etc., etc., to disconnect from the body. We are challenged to be holistic now. How do I stress? Because one of the things about denial is that the brain, the mind, can override the body. So that if you're stressing in terms of your skin or your stomach or your however, right? That is an indicator, that is your radar system that something is not wrong, that something is not right with me in terms of how I'm reacting to my environment. And the brain could override that. So we need to be aware of our own BS going forward, right? And again, it comes back to the authentic thing. And of course, how are employees reacting to different things? Those who are formerly extroverts and now introverts and vice versa. People who can't stop talking, people who just go silent, people whose behavior has changed, et cetera, from the norm. So there are cues out there that we can use in order to a radar system to be sensitive to how things have changed, both in terms of the individual and the organization, as we take the pulse of the culture going forward. I'll end there.
All right, thanks a lot.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Anna-Marie.
No, I was saying what Keith is talking about, the brain, the connection between brain and body. This is where the mindfulness comes in. You have to stop once you begin and realize that, listen, something is wrong. But it is that it has to happen. You have to begin that process with yourself. I mean, it wouldn't happen overnight, but you also have to understand that if it continues to happen, that you, your brain and your body not, and you're getting stressed and you're thinking about work and what have you, you stop. You get them to understand that, wait a minute, I have to stop. But that takes some, I guess, maturity. It takes some serious...
Growing up.
Well, growing up. It takes some practice, but we don't want people to overstress when we say fall off the wagon and don't do what they were supposed to do. Just accept it within yourself that, listen, this is a new process for me. And this is going to happen to me. Be real. This is going to happen. So let me know. Take some deep breaths and deal with it.
They have to forgive themselves. They have to learn how to forgive themselves.
Yes.
So we are 10:32, so I'm gonna ask each one of you to wrap up and give us your highlights as to what we really should be focusing on as we transition in this whole new world. So Ren, you want to start? Let's Ren, you go ahead.
All right. While COVID is there, and we know that the only thing that we can do right now is mitigate its effects. We cannot stop it as yet. Science will do that perhaps in the future. But I think COVID should not stop us also from enjoying still the things that we enjoy. It was Indian arrival yesterday here in Guyana, and to our page and our WhatsApp, and I said, let us wear as we used to some Indian traditional costumes today, right? When we go to work, because COVID should not stop us from doing the fun that we used to have before. And people were very happy to hear that. And, you know, little things like that can actually help the working situation to feel more positive about things, even if like it's a little negative outside. And then another thing perhaps that I would like to say is that let us not lose sense of humor at work, because in terms of, I come from a country, and I think Nigel would attest to this, that Filipinos would love to smile. Like one National Geographic photographer said, like, it is hard for you to see a child not smiling in the Philippines. And he is a photographer. So I will take that as a form of resiliency. And I think we need not lose that kind of fun that we have, or the, you know, our ability to make a situation a little lighter than what it really is. So that is it. Thank you very much for the appreciation from the group that, you know, I've been reading the comments there. So thanks to all Kamla, especially.
Thank you for taking the time, Ren. Keith?
Leadership is being challenged to reinvent itself, like all of us. We need to try to build trust in this new environment, whatever it may look like. We need to be aware of the things that we have no control over. And what we have control over, starting with self in terms of individual, self in terms of the organization, and how we adapt and readjust this new reality. We need to look at the world through a different lens, given that it is changing. We need to think more systemically, right? We are part of a system that is, you know, obvious given the current scenario and the lack of boundaries, or the breaking down of boundaries. And so we need to think more systemically, and we need to think from our location here in the Caribbean as to what are our strengths and how we could maximize and leverage them going forward. So it really calls for some critical thinking and creative leadership.
Thank you. Anna Maria?
Yeah, I just saw, as Dexter said, that, you know, COVID, there are some positives.
It's not all negative. Of course.
Yep. It's not all negative. And I think we really do need to help our employees, the leadership, to learn a little bit about acceptance of self and where we are now, and that we will get through this, but you know, the leadership has to become real to their employees now, because before, you know, there would be this manager and this, you know, we used to have complaints when employees were sent to the EAP. A lot of them would say, you know, the manager should be here. The manager should be here. The chairman should be here. I don't know why, you know. And I think now is a time where these managers and these leaders, I think Keith, you know, talked about it, need to become real to the employees. They have to come out of those offices. They have to come out of the offices and put themselves out here on this, what you call it, virtual thingy. And sorry, I don't know, that's not a jargon, right? Thingy. sorry, tell me what it is.
No need to apologize. You've been authentic, no worry.
Listen. Anyway, and begin as the building trust, as you know, Keith said. This is a time when we have to do that. I mean, we don't know what is going to be said on the 10th, which is on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
We have no idea. We are hearing things, but as Keith said, everybody hearing something different. So we do really need, as the leadership in organizations, to become more real to employ to the people we lead. We have to be real.
Yep. So, as you mentioned, the EAP and being sent to the EAP, I think it's the Employers Consultative Association. They're online with us, and they've said that we should have EAP for leaders. Why going through this so that we can guide them to how to deal with their teams? And I think that's an excellent suggestion.
So,
we need EAP for the leadership, not for the employees, to help them in how they deal with the employees. And Lucy has joined us. Lucy, you came in at the end. I realized that you most probably were dealing with some emergency. So no need to apologize, but it's good to have you here. Do you want to give us any words of wisdom before we wrap up, Lucy? I don't know if she's hearing.
I think no. Her mic is muted. I think her mic.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean she can't hear. So I don't know.
Okay.
Anyhow, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us, and I think we had another excellent session. At this point in time, given the massive change that we are going through, I think it's important that the mind is that we understand the mind and the emotion and the emotions and how to deal with that as we navigate the transition that we're going through. But I don't expect the transition to stop. I think we're going to be moving from transition to transition. So, Kamla, you want to wrap it up?
Yes, all right. Thank you so much, Nigel. On behalf of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, I really want to thank our panel and also our participants who have taken the time to join us this morning. Really, this, I think, has been another key session in helping us to understand the changing environment and therefore how we function in it. I really enjoyed learning some of the tips that were shared with us, particularly for us as leaders, being authentic with our employees. I liked how Ren shared actual experiences with sharing their financial information with employees so that those persons who may have to have variable pay are in a better position to understand and accept what that means. I really enjoyed too his sharing that when someone goes through a trauma, a nice strategy is to have them retell the story. And I thought there was a lot of good advice for us who are also functioning from home. Several of our panelists spoke to that, of communicating with our family members and sharing exactly what it is we are dealing with. Because at this moment, it's not just about the impact on organizations, but the impact on individuals as we cope to be able to help make our organizations healthy when we are able to have a better understanding of what's going on. So I really sincerely thank everyone. This has been an amazing session. So I invite you all to join us next week again. We'll have another session where we would be looking at some more changes in the environment with respect to businesses. Particularly, our focus will be on some of the legislative changes that require us to do different filings with respect to ownership of our companies and so. So we'll share some more information on that soon. Thank you guys so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. And we will continue to be in touch with you. Have a good day now.
Take good care.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye. Nice meeting you
bye.
All.
Yes. Thank you, Ren. Yeah. Yes. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Are we coming out? Kamala?
Yes. Yes. You can leave the meeting now. Yes. Thank you so much. And we will talk again soon. All right?
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Sure. Bye.